Lorraine sat on the bed. A bed, notes Lorraine, where people spend a third of their life sleeping, is an excellent source of vibrations. When I first moved into Doc's pad, the only beds that were there were beds people had died in. Ghosts in me are like mosquitoes in me. When they bite me, they just swell up and turn blue and die. A bed, knows Lorraine, where people spend a third of their life sleeping is an excellent source of vibrations. All lights were turned off but one, and Lorraine closed her eyes. I see a black man approaching, she soon said, speaking out loud like a newscaster. He's wearing a dark uniform with no braid or decoration. This man is with us now. Eyes darted around the room, but no such figure was visible. This man is overtaken with a sense of fear. How much time have I got, Peter? 1 minute. This man, eyes darted around the room, but no figure was visible. This man is overtaken with a sense of fear, guilt, and lack of acceptance. He feels very sorry for something. Lorraine stopped, her body tense, her arms straight out beside her. He's speaking to me now. He tells me that upon being met at the front door by a staff aide, the group made its way upstairs to the MacArthur bedroom, where the officers and their wives found seats on the floor. I'm reading from The Demonologist by Gerald Riddle, The Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren. It made its way upstairs to the MacArthur bedroom, where the officers and their wives found seats on the floor. Lorraine sat on the bed. A bed, notes Lorraine, where people spend a third of their life sleeping is an excellent source of vibrations. All lights were turned off but one, and Lorraine closed her eyes. I see a black man approaching, she soon said, speaking out loud like a newscaster. He's wearing a dark uniform with no braid or decoration. This man is with us now. Eyes darted around the room, but no figure was visible. This man is overtaken with a sense of fear, guilt, and lack of acceptance. He feels very sorry for something. Lorraine stopped, her body tense, her arms straight out beside her. He's speaking to me now. He tells me, and you know why we're doing this, don't you? He tells me that he has been accused of murder. His cell is in the basement, but the army has exonerated him of that murder. He is very, very sorry, and he can't hold his sorrow any longer. That's why he's been taking wallets. He wants the army to know his sorrow. I mean, those ones out there, they think different than us. I don't really see the connection between sorrow and taking wallets. However, I've had sorrow over the last 9 years that have been solved by a lot of wallets. Everyone in the room sat silent, waiting to hear more. What is your name, young man? Lorraine asked. Tell me your name. He tells me his name is Greer. He spells it G-R-E-E-R. What is the date? Now, is this a bunch of crock? It is the early 18th. No, it's the early 1800s. First, she thought it was 18th century, but then, correction, 1800s. He doesn't know the date anymore. Poor guy forgot when he died. You got to hand it to Johann the monk. He remembered. He doesn't know the date anymore. He says he just wants his sorrow to be understood. He wants to know who I am. Lorraine, deep in trance, began to bend forward. Ed told her to lean back. Mr. Greer, she said, I have been sent by the army to find out your problem. No, Mr. Greer, you are not held in dishonor, she said in an apparent reply to a question the officers and their wives present didn't hear. Your exoneration was for a purpose. It is on the records that the death was caused, or that the death you caused was not a murder. Your exoneration stands on the records. Listen to me, Mr. Greer. Your sorrow is understood by the army, but it is only proper that your sorrow be over. There's nothing we can do for you. You are holding yourself back. You must exonerate yourself. Enough time has passed. It's now the 20th century. This is the 1970s. You do not understand the present day. Each time you take belongings from an important person, you put the army in a very dangerous position. Apparently he responded. He tells me he has no more need to do this. He feels confused. He wants to come back to life. Lorraine's arm slackened. Then she began to drift away from the trance. Lorraine, Ed said forcefully, stay with him. Try to send him on. This is the Bible. This is the Bible. First Samuel 28. When Saul saw the host of the Philistines, king of Israel, Saul, he was afraid and his heart greatly trembled. First Samuel 28, verse 5. Page 364, if you've got a Bible like mine. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. Then said Saul unto his servants, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor. And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and he went, and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up, whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest what Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits, and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul sware to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall be no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, bring me up Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. And the king said unto her, be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods. The margin says, divine beings ascending out of the earth. He said unto her, what form is he of? She said, an old man cometh up, and he's covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel. Yeah. Theologically, you're at a crossroad. Was Samuel being impersonated? Or was it Samuel's spirit? So the Bible's saying is Saul perceived that it was Samuel. He stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. And Samuel said to Saul, or at least the one perceived as Samuel, said to Saul, "Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up?" And Saul answered, "I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and answered me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what shall I do." Now what Samuel had to say to him, you can read it some other time. Or what that being he perceived as Samuel said to him. I just want you to know that those who read the Bible through in 62 and 72 and 82 encounter the same kind of things. What do you do when you go through the Gospel of Mark, a simple little gospel, and everywhere Jesus goes, he even finds them in the synagogue that have familiar spirits? What was it that took this demoniac of this demoniac boy of the Gadarenes and made him powerful enough to break chains and terrorize a village and tear his clothes off? And when Jesus talked to him, these demons spoke. And in one of the passages they said, "Don't make us go to the abyss before our time. Can we go in those pigs?" Now, demon powers, Samuel's spirit at least perceived to be such. Listen to me, Mr. Greer. Your sorrow is understood by the army. It's only proper your sorrow be over. There's nothing we can do for you. You are holding yourself back. You must exonerate yourself. Enough time has passed. It is now the 20th century. This is the 1970s. You do not understand the present day. Each time you take belongings from an important person, you put the army in a very dangerous position. Well, let's keep going. Her arm slackened. She began to drift. "Lorraine," Ed said forcefully, "stay with him. Try to send him on." Lorraine sat silent for long minutes and then again spoke. "To live again, Mr. Greer, you must go to the light. It is time for you to surrender yourself and begin again. Everyone must do this. Focus on the light and step toward it. Go to your friends and family. Go home to the light, Mr. Greer. Focus on the light and be drawn toward it." Lorraine suddenly snapped awake, her eyes wide open. "He's gone. I lost him," she declared. The lights were switched back on as the officers and their wives rose to their feet, speaking in anxious, hushed tones. Lorraine, standing in the center of the group, gave a complete description of the man and said at the end, Greer had simply vanished. Shortly thereafter, the entourage made its way downstairs and left, while the Warrens and the major waited in the sitting room. A few minutes later, the general and his wife arrived. Lorraine briefly reviewed the communication she'd had, noting in conclusion, "I didn't get the impression that Greer really wanted to be here. In a way, I think he was just waiting to be dismissed. After this, I seriously doubt there'll be any more pockets picked, but if it does happen again, please let me know. There are things that I can do at a distance." "That's very nice of you," said the general. "However, there's one small item. No black man has ever served at the point until this century. But I promise you the major will have this matter checked out completely in the next few weeks." As they spoke in the foyer, a helicopter could be heard descending outside. It was time to go. After an exchange of gratitude and farewell on the front steps, the general and his wife crossed the lawn, boarded a large service helicopter bound for New York. The Warrens slipped into the back seat of the waiting limousine, wondering if Greer had indeed ended his travail of over a century. A few weeks later, while lecturing at Boston University, Ed and Lorraine were called from the stage to take a telephone call from West Point. The Army wanted them to know that a complete and thorough search of the records had been made. It was discovered Am I boring you?
No, sir.
Well, you look bored. It was discovered that a black man, a porter by the name of Greer, had served at the point assigned to the Thayer Mansion in the early 19th century. He had been accused of a murder, but the Army exonerated him of it. His records had been out of order, and he would now be filed as deceased. Let's go back. I got one left here now. Let's go back to the Donovan household under attack by demons. Are you interested?
Yes, sir.
Are you getting the impression that these people, the Warrens, are not fly-by-nights? They botched up the movie, in my judgment, The Amityville Horror. Are you interested in this?
Yes, sir.
I mean, all I'm trying to do is open our mind to dimensions. I don't want to create fear. The very same Bible that introduces us to supernatural beings that are negative out there gives the promise, greater is he that is in us than he that's in the world. You're not to be afraid. But you sure are stupid to close your mind to the possibility. For centuries, they closed their mind to a round earth. Straight line, shortest distance between two points, till Einstein came along. There is no measurement device that exceeds light until black holes were discovered. That captures light. There's got to be a sensible line to walk between the nuts that prey on the sensational side of such things and the closed-mindedness of those who are so naturalistic that they won't accept any possibility of these dimensions. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
I'm just trying to do what I did with the Bermuda Triangle. Dump enough that you got to conclude some strange things go on there. Now I want to dump enough from enough sources from the Glastonbury situation we were on earlier to this that some of the hard heads and skeptics like me will say, hey, wait a minute. Let's look into this stuff. And you remember that crypt in Bermuda? What was moving those things around? I'm telling you, there are supernatural forces at work in this world. If you don't know it, you must not be troubling them much.